Today on Doomed!
This past Wednesday, white nationalist Nick Fuentes and his merry band of Groypers got together in the New York City borough of Staten Island and held an anti-vaxxer rally. And one person was there to catch, well, a lot more than one person was there, but actually not many people, as our guest will tell us, because he was there. And he's going to give us an on-the-ground report on basically, more broadly, how white supremacist groups are linking up with the anti-vaxxer movement and, quite frankly, using it to their advantage. Let me pull him up on the screen here. He is a regular guest on this show and one of my favorite people to talk to. There we are. Michael Edison Hayden of the Southern Poverty Law Center. Michael, thank you so much for joining me today.
I'm very excited. I'm hearing myself a little bit.
Okay, let me see if I could do a little something here, but otherwise, oh, I see what it might be. All right, no problem. Cool.
Some new equipment this time?
Yeah, I did since the last time you've been on, I did some rearranging to get some, so people, guests can hear what's going on but I could just easily, no problem, change that around. So you'll just hear me. There we go. That should fix the problem.
Sounds perfect.
Perfect. So Michael, I mean, I guess let's start with this. I mean, you always come on this show and have something incredible to bring us, and this is no different. And we have what basically is Nick Fuentes in the flesh, on the ground, in the public sphere rally in New York City. I mean, it's not... I don't know if Nick Fuentes has held NYC events before. We could argue over whether Staten Island is legit New York City. I will say, for the purpose of this conversation, I think it is.
Yeah, well, we don't want to lose claim to Wu-Tang Clan, right? So
that's true. That's true. So what? First of all, how did they promote this event? Because I have to be honest. I'm aware of some of the ways white supremacists are using the anti-vaxxer movement. I was not aware of this rally, and it's in the same city I'm in.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons this kind of caught a lot of people by surprise is because Fuentes has been suspended from every major social media platform, right? I came on here to talk about the Twitter investigation, the long form analysis that I published about that website.
And then very next day, Twitter banned him.
they had to do something about one of the people on there, right? So they chose Nick. He was the low hanging fruit. He's the most despised, I think, among other people on the right. So I think that made him a very easy target, right? So it's like it's no sweat off anybody else's back, like, if you get rid of him. Anyway, so he's been suspended from most every major social media platform, right? So this, Vax Watch tour that he's got going now, which is kind of, you can feel he's like trying to figure out how to get his toes back in after January 6th, happened almost completely on Telegram, which... has a lot more reach than I think people realize. And it's certainly more than I was willing to give it credit for. I'm of two minds here. I saw about 60 Nick Fuentes people there. I'm going to say roughly 60 people. And that includes some people who saw the little pig pen that the cops put, these guys in.
Right.
If you saw the pictures that I posted to Twitter, there are some people who saw that pen and were like, oh, I'm just going to hang out on the side here. I don't really want to be in there. I think in total, probably about 50 to 60 around that area, Nick Fuentes supporters. So I have two minds at this. On one hand, yeah, that's not too much. On the other hand, this was not a holiday. It's not Veterans Day, which is today. I know because my kids are back at school. This was a work day for most people and a school day for his high school fans. Right. Of which he has quite a few.
Right.
And to get like 60 people about that into Staten Island, which requires multiple forms of transportation, as you know, it's a hassle to get into Staten Island. If you want to take the ferry, you know, that comes every 30 minutes or so, I think. Most people have to take a bus. I took the bus from Lower Manhattan, and there's a guy, on the bus sitting next to me who happened to be going to the rally, and he put a Let's Go Brandon sticker on the side of the bus, which I did not have time to remove. I'm sure someone else did. Yeah. So I'm of two minds. Like, on one hand, it's not that big a rally. On the other hand, like, you know, that's actually a pretty decent showing. Then you had to add an extra like thing in this, which is the likelihood that Nick Fuentes is cooperating with federal law enforcement is so high after January 6th. It's extremely high. And so if you could imagine following this guy into war, so to speak, in the culture wars, going out there with your face in an anti-vax, anti-mask, like, he's basically telling people to go out there unmasked. He later changed that after he saw that I was posting pictures of people or whatever. And yeah, I think he had to save face. But really speaking, I mean, the whole thing is to invite people to go out barefaced, you know, go into a little pen and get their picture taken. You got some real numbskulls to want to do that, quite frankly, I think.
Right. I mean, we saw that there was quite a few numbskulls who did what they did on January 6th and did it without any face covering whatsoever as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when I say the likelihood that he's cooperating with federal law enforcement is high, I can't name a single individual who would be more likely to be cooperating with federal law enforcement on the extreme far right than Nick Fuentes. We just know he's under investigation. I have heard that like his lawyers have been contacted regarding the January 6th committee. This guy is very, very, he's really, really deep into this, in trouble from, you know, his actions over the past year. So it's fascinating that people are willing to see all that and then just go into it anyway.
Right. Right. Now, I actually wonder about that, because on this show, we've covered it before, specifically how a lot of white supremacists are jumping onto, I mean, the anti-vaccination, anti-vaxxer movements and white supremacy does seem to be not strange, quite, it makes sense that they're bedfellows in some ways, but on this show, I spoke with Devin Burghardt of the Institute for Research and Education, who specifically had put out a report about how white supremacists were using the anti-vaxxer movement to try to seep back into the mainstream, because obviously due to the COVID-19 pandemic, white supremacy might still be fringe, but anti-vaxxers have gone into the mainstream. And right. They're using the anti-vaxxer movement to sort of, you know, get back into more people's homes, I guess, get it on, into the, there was a few anti-vaxxers who ended up being like, who ran these big anti-vaxxer podcasts, who like blew up on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, back in the earliest days of the pandemic. And it turned out they were like white supremacists hiding behind the anti-vaxxer, stuff. But do you think that, Nick Fuentes was asked to do this, or is this, him just, basically trying to keep doing what he's doing and doing exactly that, using the anti-vaxxer movement?
Well, I don't know. I don't know who's funding him. I don't know, if there's anybody advising him from behind the scenes to do one thing or another. I do know that they feel that they can get traction. These guys feel that they can get traction with this medical tyranny narrative. This idea that, like, doctors are strapping people down and forcing them to take medicines that are, going to change them in some way, or going to, violate their rights and so forth. Although it doesn't really connect very well with the brute racist side of the white supremacist stuff, right? It's not like, oh, it's like, well, I understand the black community's hesitation around, any kind of medical, you know, mandates and things like that. I understand that a lot better than this. It's like, their interest in it actually has much more parallels to like the kind of anti-Semitic conspiracy theory, you know, type things.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because if you believe that, what are they called? Zionist occupational government or whatever, ZOG, is an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory that a lot of these guys believe in. This idea that Jews from behind the scenes are manipulating our world in such a way to, you know, weaken white people and, you know, make the white race go away or whatever, in order to maintain power for Jewish people. If you believe in that type of conspiracy theory that requires like so many layers of manipulation, you're also likely to you're likely to believe in this kind of medical tyranny narrative at the same time, because it's the same kind of suspension of logic, right? Where it's just like this idea that you know, COVID, the government created COVID, or some, you know, whoever created COVID in order to do this, you need to really be off the deep end and really believing in some serious levels of manipulation in order to believe that. So I think it's actually something that works with people who are, you know, virulently anti-Semitic. That is like a real, you know, patch of extremists that it fits in with. And it's not surprising that it was mixed in with this weird over the top faux Christian stuff that Nick Fuentes has been doing recently, which he like aired out a lot at that rally.
Right. And we'll get to the specifics of the rally in a second, especially this great video that I will play for everybody, where Nick Fuentes seemed to be really bothered by your
your. They didn't want me there.
Right, right. I wonder why. but you know, you mentioned Telegram, and you know, it's interesting that you know, it seems like, in Nick Fuentes' case, Telegram seems to be the only place, the main, you know, of the big, you know, the big social platforms that he still has a presence on. And, you know, in some ways, I think that's not so bad. It gives a good way to keep tabs on some of these folks without putting them on some of the more accessible mainstream platforms.
Yeah, just to interact there, they have to be somewhere, right? I just want to make that clear. Like, you know, I'm like, we don't want to like eliminate their narrative is that we want to remove their right to speak, you know, et cetera. They have to be somewhere. Right. Right. And might as well be on Telegram. It's actually a pretty useful little app for monitoring the far right in some ways.
And it's sequestered too. Like, that's a major thing. Like, you know,
they're going to be somewhere, dude.
Right.
That's the main thing.
Right. And you know, you have to literally seek them out to find them, unlike, you know, a platform like Twitter or Facebook, where the algorithm will just throw it in your grandma's feed and say, here, check out this young Nick Fuentes fellow, grandma.
Right. You Jack Pizovic.
Right. Right. But here's my question. Where's Nick Fuentes especially streaming now? Like, this was the guy who made his like his like standout tribute that like separated him from some of the other white supremacists, that like he is this like young guy with this, like you said, high school audience who live streams a lot. And you know, the kids love live streamers. He's not on Twitch though, and I think he's not allowed on like DLive and the other like side platforms.
DLive banned. So we reported out, myself, Megan Squire, and Hannah Gase, and I. We reported out, I think we did the first story on DLive, the first story about like white supremacists using using it. Actually, wait, there might have been some a little bit other reporting. If I'm not giving someone credit, that's fine. But we did some very extensive reporting, at least, about who was on there, how much they were raising. That was all Megan Squire. She's so good at this stuff. No, I was just saying that like that went for a while, and like they wouldn't answer us. I think Charles Wayne or whatever is the DLive guy. I think is the guy who runs it. They wouldn't answer us. They didn't do anything. No, we wouldn't, you know, return our you know, our request for comment or whatever. Then January 6th happened, and the New York Times kind of like re-reported some of the stuff that we had reported out, and they pulled him, and they obviously pulled Baked Alaska after January 6th.
Right.
So now he's on this like. I don't want to give the exact domain, but it's really like self done. Like they've like really established it themselves inside the America First movement, his live streams. And we have some reporting coming out that shows the tech team overlap between between Fuentes, you know, I don't want to give away too much of the reporting, but to tease it out for people, they're going to be excited when it comes out, because I think it's some really great reporting. It's actually the same group. It's Hannah, Megan, and myself. Just the same people who are in the tech teams with InfoWars, Epic, are also helping to sustain Nick Fuentes online. And they are, some of them have longstanding ties to the white supremacist movement, and some of them have been involved, and you know, I don't want to give this too much of this away, with promoting some very, what you might call accelerationist stuff, you know, pro-terror attack, it's seemingly pro-terror attack stuff. So you can see that in, you know, in a story that should be out, should have been out this week. I'm not really sure what happened. We are very slow, notoriously slow. Anyway, but yeah, it's a very like DIY setup that Nick's got going.
And so, all right, so you go down to, here's another question. You know, we've seen actually a lot of really, you know, large, actually, again, New York City is a big city, so large in a sense of, you know, a couple hundred people, if not maybe 1,000 people, at you know, anti-mandate rallies. Again, you know, large for the number of people on the ground, but in the terms of how many people are in the city, you know, fairly small ratio. But again, you know, we've seen marches across the Brooklyn Bridge with, you know, hundreds, if not, you know, a couple thousand people. But Nick Fuentes gathers his crew of a couple dozen and head to Staten Island. Why Staten Island? Like, I know it is you know, the most conservative part of New York City, if you don't count like probably like the Rockaways and Howard Beach in Queens.
Yeah.
But it's certainly
outside the city, also Suffolk County, which is Trump's favorite place to go to in New York.
Right. And that, when I'm on the topic, I shouldn't leave out Whitestone in Queens either. They just might have voted in Vicky Palladino as the next city council person, which is, you know, it's another story. Vicky Palladino, by the way, who I think is been in good graces with Nick Fuentes previously, because her son, who is a campaign manager for her campaign, is a big fan, I believe, of the Groypers.
Yeah, we get on tangents. Let's stay focused. I was going to go on a long tangent about the GOP, but like,
right.
Go.
But, all right, so keep going. So why Staten Island? You know, get it, big conservative base there. Obviously, that doesn't matter if you just get 60 people out, you know.
Yeah.
So why, you know, it would have made more sense to just go to, you know, somewhere where there's tons of, you know, walk-bys in like Times Square or in Brooklyn or something.
I mean, if they did this in Queens, the odds of them getting their asses kicked would like be much, much higher. Let's just be honest. You know, I mean, just like Staten Island is a place that votes in high numbers for Trump. It's totally abnormal for the rest of New York City, right? So, like, what are they going to do? They're going to like go to Brooklyn, like it's like the literal belly of the beast, where like, you know, where like Sleep will go and play like three shows in a row or something. And it's like, you know what I mean? The place where it's like the place where you know, New York hipsters who are left-leaning, you know, it's just a question of like, you know, are you kind of a DSA person, or are you an anarchist or whatever? You're not going to go to some place like that and do a Nick Fuentes rally. It's not going to go over very well. You go to Staten Island because you're looking for, and they were really going for this. If you put up a sign that just says America First, Trump said it a lot, right? They don't know that it has this kind of umbrella thing for Fuentes' movement. You just assign this as America First and an American flag and an anti-vax thing, you're going to get, you know, people who have mashed potatoes for brains honking their horns, right? They don't know if they're honking their horns for a white supremacist group or something like that, right? So they're just like, oh, yeah, you know, like right. Trump, right? Like, there are Trump supporters in this country. Like, I went on a vacation with my wife for like a weekend or whatever to a very rural community. And, you know, there were like huge Trump 2024 signs. This is like months ago. It's like already. Part of me is just like, it's like, why do you need to be so like, aren't you unhappy being so deep in this like political culture war? Like, why? Like, I would be just so unhappy. Like, what, you know, I think I was like, I supported Bernie. Just put like a huge Bernie Sanders, like already. Like, it's just so, there's something withering about it. Anyway, besides the point, you're going to get in Staten Island, you're going to get people drive by and like, honk their horns and stuff like that as they drive by. That's why you do it. Because if you try it in Queens, you know, the odds of you getting your ass kicked are pretty high. You know, you can't just walk around like some of these guys are just walking around in like America First hats. They're so foolish looking too. Like they don't like, you know, a nice baseball cap that like falls back a little bit, or these things like look like fucking like train conductor hats. They don't go down, right? These America First hats that these idiots wear. They look like fucking train conductors. It's like, like this. So they're wearing this like, cause they have to get the America First like big on it. So these dumbasses are wearing these like stupid hats like this, and they're all carrying fucking flags, and they got like flags with like, you know, this America First. You can't, there are neighborhoods you can't do that. Like you can't do that in, you know, in Astoria or something like that. It's not gonna go over well.
Right. You know, with that said, when you headed down there and you were in the crowd, were you worried about your own safety, being that you were in MAGA World and you were at this Groyper event? And
I was worried about one thing, dude. I was worried about one thing, which is getting COVID. Like, because I am in an anti-vax rally with a bunch of morons. That's what I was worried about. They were like, oh, I'm gonna take off your mask. It must be ugly under there. That's why you're not doing it. I'm like, no, I'm just not taking my mask off because I don't like anywhere near you guys. Like at an anti-vax rally with Nick Fuentes. I just don't want COVID, man. I'm vaccinated. So it was outdoors, so I'm not worried about that. But it's just like they're really gross guys. And they I'm not really worried about that. I've already in my life dealt with so many like threats. I mean, these guys are trying, since then they've been trying to dox me and all this. They always fail at it, right? They keep publishing my parents' address where I last lived when I was in high school. They have no idea where I am. And these guys, they're not an intimidating group. They are a very, very insecure lot. And you can see like Fuentes himself, the level of insecurity and fear that drives this guy. First of all, the visual of just showing up in a protective vest, which I guess was a bulletproof vest. I didn't want to say I used the word protective vest because I just did not know. But apparently it was a bulletproof vest. It was reported in some of these articles. It's just like staggering statement. It's just like this, it's so paranoid of like what could happen to you as you go in. Looking so nervous when he came by, like, you know, and he passed me. He had already posted something. If you see this guy, like, don't whatever. There was not a good crowd of counter protesters there. I was a little disappointed. Then again, you know, many of the counter protesters probably working. It's the middle of the day. Getting out to Staten Island is a pain in the ass. You can't even do it at a lunch break or whatever. But like, you know, he looked nervous. Like he's got that like nervous smile. Referenced me multiple times during this thing. I'm just one person there. And you know, the thing is, I kept yelling questions to him, and you could see like that Fuentes was like, when I would yell the questions, which is the questions I'd asked were, Nick, are you cooperating with federal law enforcement right now? And I just kept yelling. I was like, Nick, are you cooperating with federal law enforcement right now? Are you cooperating with federal law? Have you had conversations with federal law enforcement, Nick? Nick, what did you tell the FBI when you spoke to them? Don't tell me you didn't talk to the FBI. Like you are cooperating with, I mean, if you're not cooperating with federal law enforcement, why haven't you been, you know, like what are you doing? Why are you doing vax rallies out in the middle of nowhere in Staten Island? And the other thing I was saying with him is have you received a subpoena from the January 6th committee to shore up something that I believe has happened? So He didn't seem to like those questions because it's weird. It's very weird. He's got these young fans and he's signing their hats and all this shit. It's weird.
Right. You'd think, you know, some of your questions that you're shouting out loud would cause some of his fans who are standing right there to wonder, holy shit, maybe what this guy is saying is true and Nick Fuentes is selling us out. But no, right? Of course not.
Well, I mean, the part of the problem with working for SPLs, like the gift and the curse, so to speak, is like the nice part about it is I get to go there and I'm just taking pictures of people's faces. Like I'm doing a service for anybody who wants it. This guy. You know, a regular paper, you can't do that. Understood. I mean, we really build a lot of research about these people. So that's like a good thing. And the fact that I can yell those questions directly is good. The bad thing is that I can't like lean on those questions. It's an immediate confrontation when I ask a question and when I'm there, right? I can't blend in. That's the one thing that I lose from, you know, my past journalism when I used to be like.
Did you forget your red MAGA hat at home, Mike?
Yeah, there's no point. I was actually wearing like a black mask with the Southern Poverty Law Center logo on it.
Oh, well, there's the giveaway.
and I was sitting next to the guy on the bus, and he's just like, you know, putting his Let's Go brand. It's just really embarrassing. But, you know, that's the part of the problem is because of that direct confrontation, they're not going to talk to me in the same way. And I have to try to get information in different ways, which I have repeatedly done about these guys. So that's, you know, I've got my ways of getting it.
Right. I got an important question in the YouTube live stream chat. This comes from a Jared Holt.
Yes.
How many groypers can Mike take in an arm wrestling competition?
More these days. More than I could have a few months ago. I've been working out and things like that. I had a small had surgery. I had to take a week off of it, but a little bit more than I could have a few weeks ago is the answer. I would say, you know, the vast majority of gripers. They're not a very intimidating bunch when you see them. And, you know, I just want to say something else, because I think Holt would find this element of it pretty interesting. You know, I think it's very easy to just be like, oh, they're like, you know, a lot of the people who are responding on Twitter are like, oh, they're so like, look at these guys, woof, they're so busted and all that stuff. I mean, you know, let's be fair here. I think a lot of these guys are so like, are too insecure to really go for it and try to be their best selves. Does that make sense? Like there's a level, you know, they are looking to some kind of alpha ideal that they fear that they're never going to be. So they don't try, you know, and they're not like horrible looking people. They could actually, you know, probably do more than they do, but I mean, they're just, you can feel that there's this psychosexual anxiety about the entire group of Fuentes' movement that really drives them. And I say that, you know, based on actual something that's real, which is, you know, a lot of, you know, when I've covered a lot of these things, I used to get like a ton of stuff about the fact that I'm half Arab from all these guys. Vidar has like been like, you know, called me like the half Egyptian, this, that, whatever. You used to get a lot of that type of shit. I didn't get any of that. Everything I got was of a sexual nature from these guys, right? Everything was about like, so one guy kept following around with like really, really explicit sexual stuff, like saying like, I don't want to say it because it's, you know, it's not fair to your audience. And it's like, it made me feel
knowing what's going
on. I mean, he was just like real, like details about like fetishistic male on male sex. That he was like saying, oh, we're going to go home and we're going to do that. And like, oh, this is my boyfriend tonight and we're going to do this. And it was like something where I picked up on it. And I'm like, I felt bad for the guy because I'm like, this is a lot of detail, right? This is like, you know, you got something on your mind, buddy. This is like, I feel a little weird, you know? And I think it's very easy. I don't want to use that like easy out, be like, oh, there's a lot of, you know, sexual repression and maybe that, whatever. But I was struck by how often and how like how frequently these guys bring up specifically anti-LGBTQ rhetoric. That is like what seems to be driving the entire movement. And there are, you know, there are people of color there. I mean, there were a few people who were not just like your typical, you know, identity Europa dropouts.
Right. Right. Now, let me play this video. Well, first off, this photo is great. You know, these guys love using the soy boy face meme. And yes. I don't think I've ever seen in all the, you know, all the photos that are ever been out there that these guys like to like compare that meme to. I don't think I've ever seen one so directly look like that soy face meme than this. Like, it is. Like, literally, it looks like they might have traced this. The guy who made the soy face meme is from the future. He saw this photo. He took it back to when the soy face meme first came out. And it was just a traced version of this. Like, I don't think I've ever seen anything look more like it than this. It's incredible.
It's so good. It's so good.
Are they still wearing those stupid glasses that they were wearing over the summer? The Viper or whatever?
Yeah, they're still trying to get that going a little bit, even though, you know, it's the middle of November. Yeah, they're still doing it. They're still trying very hard to get that going. You know, it's actually so different from other white supremacist groups. Like, if you see, speaking of feds, if you see the National Justice Party, which is like Mike Penovich's group, we've definitely talked about him on here or whatever. You know, I've ID'd about eight of those guys now. And they've shut down like their operations, their public facing operations, like all together. They just do things in like a barn and a couple in Pennsylvania and like one, we believe in Ohio. And it's like, they're just like, just everything's locked down and like, they, you know, nobody sees anything. We don't know how many people are in the audience and like all this or whatever. They just hide. Everybody goes like, you know, and this and whatever. Fuentes is still able to get people to just show up. And the way he's able to do it that is different and that strikes me as being different is that he has fans. He has real fans. And these guys who came, a couple people who came with their like mom. Like, this guy came with his mom. And I was like, eek. It looked like his mom. And I was like, yo. And they at the end of it got their hats, those fucking train conductor ass looking hats. They got them signed on the bill by Nick Fuentes. So it's like he actually gets people because he's got like fans, like influencer fans, which I didn't really know was a thing, but it's a thing.
Right. I guess
I'm 42, man. I like, you know, the idea of me being a fan of a streamer other than you,
I mean, I guess being a griper is a family affair now. I mean, mommy's taking you now. Were they there like just to take the kid to the young man to see his favorite streamer, or were they like into it too?
It was like that, dude. It was like when my dad took me to get the new Bjork album when I was like in high school. Like, yeah, it was like that, dude. It was.
Wait, so like Nick Fuentes is like angry young white males like Justin Bieber? Is that what we're at?
Can you take me to Vax Watch? It's just like, I mean, it's sad, dude. It's I'm sorry. I didn't want to, it was like, I cracked up laughing at one point during it when Fuente, because during the, I don't know if you played the clip yet, but during the thing where he starts ranting about Christ, he's like, he's got this like, there's this like totally weird dude who's like got a huge crucifix and he's just like holding it up. It's like the least religious experience you could possibly imagine.
Let's play that clip now. Let's get right to it.
Please do.
All right. Here is the Fuentes rally when he realizes that Edison Hayden is in the crowd.
That is the fate of this nation, that man on that cross, that is our ultimate reality. That is more real than your job. That is more real than your friends. That is more real than these barricades, than that scumbag journalist over there.
Can you?
Oh, I'm sorry. You might not have heard it because I changed the settings before, so you wouldn't hear yourself. But yeah, I played it.
Yeah, I didn't hear it, but I know it. Could you hear like my kind of high pitched laugh there?
I assumed it had to be here. You because I don't think anyone else there would have had the sense of humor to find that to be funny.
I did not capture, and anybody who is there afterwards knows, is that I just had a giggle fit, and I just laughed for 3 minutes because it's just how surreal it was. Because it's like this guy is there, and it's like they're holding the cross, and it's like such a serious. It's like, you know, he's like fake serious, right? Like, you know, I went to all boys Catholic school, so it's like I'm a vet. I know my Catholicism. Anyways, this guy's like so serious, like holding the cross up and all this in this really performative bullshit way. And Fuentes is like, that man, you know, whatever other cross, that is only thing that's real. That's the only thing that's real to you. Your mom is not real. Your job is not real. And then he's like clearly so distracted by the fact that I was taking pictures or whatever. He's like, and that scumbag journalist is not real. And it just sums up, I think, how fatuous this whole thing that he's doing really is. I mean, do these guys really believe there's some kind of sincerity? There's like some sincerity. You think like Jesus Christ likes this? Like you outside of a hospital, in a cop created playpen, you know, wearing these ridiculous hats, surrounded by cops. It's just like the least religious, you know, thing you could possibly imagine.
The weird thing to me is like you got these young guys like trying to like out love Christ or something. Like it's really bizarre. Like it's like, yeah. And it's not even like, you know, in you can understand how you got these old guys, you know, these older people in like a white supremacist group like the KKK out there burning crosses. Yeah. But here you got Nick Fuentes and his like fellow, you know, Twitch teens. You know, out there going, you know, Christ is the only thing that matters. It's just like a really weird way to build even like this youth white supremacist movement. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's sort of like not
it's
connected
weird.
With like
it's
how
weird.
Young people view it, like view religion.
Right. It's weird. Okay. It's a little weird. But at the same time, like I, you know, as somebody whose job it is to study this stuff and report on it, I can point to like some very like clear things that kind of made it possible, if that makes sense. And now Hannah is much better at the whole like Christian crossover, like the sort of neo-fascist, like Christian, you know, stuff overlapping thing. She's very good at that stuff. So I'm not going to get into it. She's a researcher. I'm an investigative reporter. I'll let her get the hard details, the academic details on about this. But, you know, up until like run up to Charlottesville, where Nick was kind of got his, that's where he was like really born as a public figure, I think, in some ways. This very nihilistic, very atheistic alt-right, which had, you know, had was kind of like against these, against this kind of boomer, Judeo-Christian, you know, self-described as Israel, evangelical, you know, hub, you know, inside the Republican Party, totally against that and really embraced a lot of atheism and things like that. And then they come in, totally race first, race focused, no religion, and they have this kind of horrific display at Charlottesville that is still a PR disaster for them. I don't know why it is. They're like everything about them says that they want to kill, and you know, they have done horrific things. I mean, like you can easily point to people What about Ernest, John Ernest, the guy who went into the synagogue and would have killed many more Jews than he did in April of 2019. It's just a minor example of somebody who's like really obsessed with the kind of alt-right stuff who went out to kill. But for some reason, Charlottesville is the thing that still, you know, is the sign of their failure, where everybody kind of absorbed how nihilistic and dark this whole shit really was. And it seems as if Fuentes, a sort of a post-alt-right figure, has leaned much more on this Christ is King message and things like that to kind of superficially pad what had come before with something that is tried and tested as having a bit more of a deeper meaning. Does that make sense?
Yes.
That is something where you can, like, where, you know, I mean, you can always say, well, Jesus says to forgive and Jesus wants peace and, you know, Jesus is about love. And these are all things that you can say with no meaning behind them and continue to do the same dark, nihilistic shit. Like I said, we have a story coming out soon that is going to show some pretty, you know, what I'd say, like, terroristic pro-terrorism accelerationist threads in that movement. You know, you can still do that stuff and then but have this kind of like, well, you know, Christ is King and you know, we love each other and it's really about love and things like that. It seems like a pivot that had to be made to even exist. And exist he has. He's been very successful, I think, at kind of pulling together the type of people who would otherwise try to be in Identity Europa, possibly NPI, but like they're just a little bit more scruffy than that, I think. That was Richard Spencer's organization, for those who don't know, which had a lot of crossover with Identity Europa anyway. We're not talking about a lot of people here in general. But yeah, that's what I really think it is. It's just like they had to put this Christ is King thing on top of something that everyone had processed as being very dark and nihilistic. And that's not an appealing movement that has a lot of legs, that can't really go much further. And one last point is it's not just Christ that they use, but they also, Fuentes also uses Trump. And because Trump, I think we can all agree, in addition to being a very scary figure, is an entertainer. He's entertaining. He entertains many people. He wouldn't have been as successful as he was if he were not.
Right.
People ironically talk about how good a poster he was and things like that. So Trump is able to take like a very dark thing, like anti-democratic, you know, hard right, arguably neo-fascist politics, and put a as all successful fascists do, put an entertaining you know, display on for people and things like that. Fuentes also uses that entertainment of many of these guys who are kind of down in the dumps now, the Charlottesville types, are stuck in this hating Trump mode. They hate Trump, and they're still in the kind of atheist mode. They are just subsumed with darkness, and you know, why not Hitler? Like these sour grapes, almost like you would associate with what people call tankies or something like that, where it's just it doesn't have a lot of way up, you know, right, for them.
Right. There's a there's a low ceiling that they get hit.
Yeah.
Right.
So Fuentes is opportunistic. He's smart. He understands that like the Christ, the Trump, they open doors for him.
Right.
They don't keep him limited.
Right. You know, I wonder. I mean, it seems like this is definitely part of it, but I wonder. You brought up, you know, Charlottesville being such a PR crisis for these guys. I mean, I think it's you know, has to do with the fact that, you know, the loudest ones have found that they've found a nice little niche, full-time lifestyle where they can say this stuff and get people to send them money. But if they're an actual martyr for the cause that they're loudly trumpeting all the time, then they can't make that money and take advantage of all their fans. You know, they'll spend their life in jail, or at least a large amount of time in jail. And that's no fun.
Yeah. I mean, I think that we're all kind of absorbing right now, you know, a very interesting, there's a very interesting cultural phenomenon going on, because there's like these three trials happening at the same time right now. There's McMichaels and what's his name for the on trial for, you know, for the murder of, or the, we're going to find out, alleged murder of Arbery. I have my opinions. The Rittenhouse trial and the Sines versus Kessler lawsuit, which took a very long time to get out, which is interesting because most of the energy and intention is focused around this Rittenhouse phenomenon. And Rittenhouse is like very much, you know, a post Charlottesville figure. He was like 14 when that happened, something like that. And, you know, most attention is on that kind of hard right GOP thing that blends that little taste of fascism that you feel with the GOP every time they almost do anything now is on trial there. I think there's sort of a general consensus that what's happening was, you know, in Sines versus Kessler, granted, many of these figures were severely hurt by IFA's case against them. Like they've already like spent a lot of money. They're broke already in part because of this. So the trial has already succeeded in many ways. And so that's like, it's already been a huge success against the accused there. But also almost all those figures, like the Richard Spencer, Cantwell, Elliot Klein from Identity Europa, who's basically disappeared, Anglin, these are all really, you know, diminished public figures from where they were at that time. And I like what comes to mind for me in looking at the phenomenon and the levels of interest, very tough to compete with the Rittenhouse show. Everyone is clued into that right now. But it strikes me that everybody who's kind of involved in the far right that we see as an influencer, that somebody who is like out there and whatever, these people are ultimately totally disposable. They're just like out there to have their lives destroyed. They're willing to volunteer, step up and fill a void, and they can get a good run going. You look at like somebody like Candace Owens, who is clearly like, you know, she has found a real like niche for herself just in terms of anti-mask stuff and whatever. I remember she was doing that, like, I went into Whole Foods and I didn't wear a mask. Remember, it was like very early in the pandemic, you know, right. her thing.
Well, she serves a very obvious purpose, and there's not much competition there, I guess you can say, in terms of people trying to take that spot from her.
Yeah, but she has no talent. That's that is just apparent to anyone. And the thing is, if something should happen, these people, you know, yeah, nobody cancels anybody on the right, but they're totally disposable. Someone will just find a new one. And they'll just jack them up with views and follows, and you can use programs to give them likes and retweets and things like that. And they'll just find new ones. They're completely disposed. It's whoever right. wants to do it. And you look at somebody like Spencer, who I think, you know, is showing signals that he wants to take a much more low profile life. He wants to not be, the white nationalist leader that he aspired to be before. You look at somebody like Spencer, anytime he talks about it, he is clearly somebody who these guys used. Jack Pizobic is somebody who used to appear at all Spencer's events and wanted to be close to him as he was building his brand. And as soon as Spencer became too toxic, gone, down the toilet.
Right.
We're not really talking about Fuentes right now.
No, but that's actually what makes
this important.
Right. It absolutely is. But that's also what sort of makes Nick Fuentes so interesting, because he has been one of those rare individuals who's gone the whole distance and continues to maintain his influence in that world. Like, he's not been diminished. He's not become like a joke within that movement. He's, in fact, I think he's slowly been rising within the ranks, and he's always sort of been a an influencer in that world in a way where, like, you know, Richard Spencer, like you said, like, you know, Fuentes came around, I would say, in terms of at least, like, you know, right after Trump, and all these figures came, well, you know, in like 2015, 2016, after Trump's announcement, he's running for president. And here's Fuentes still going at it, where other people have made turns to other things, or have tried to disappear, or have been, like, you know, just basically not looked at anymore by their peers as someone with any real grip in the movement. It's been interesting to see Fuentes, actually. That's why I think I've done so many shows on him, honestly, and the Groiper movement, because the dude's you know, he's persevered in that little world of his in a way that his contemporaries haven't.
You know who, you know, I think the best parallel for Fuentes is in a sort of post Charlottesville, pre Charlottesville landscape. It's actually not somebody who is in front of a camera most of the time. I think the best parallel for Nick Fuentes is actually Andrew Anglin, because like Anglin, he, oh God, I always hate to do this because I'm always like, oh my God, what do I do? Like Anglin, there is, please don't snip this in a way or whatever. These guys have there's something that they have in terms of ability to stir a crowd. Anglin has some chops as a blogger. I don't know, like, how to say that in a way that is whatever.
No, I know exactly what you're saying. I think the best I, like, one to I, use. I think
he's among the most diabolical human beings I've ever seen. But he is very, like, good at being punchy, and produces a deluge of content that you know is geared towards building a community of people, and like he's able to get that hate and that anger to get together. People get together in his forums and his things like that, and he is able to stir that up with his blogs. And Fuentes similarly can rip off like a stream for, he can just, you watch him talk, he talks for like an hour, no breaks, just keeps going, and then this and this and this and this and this and this, right? He's got, it's most of these people are not as good as he is at doing that. And he also signals towards building a community of fans. Right. Both he and Anglin are very similar, even though one used blogs and the other uses the live stream.
Right. I usually make that same argument with some of these guys who've been able to keep it going, with Alex Jones is who I use. The guy obviously has a talent on the microphone. He's very charismatic. Obviously, what he's chosen to do with those talents, horrific, horrible, shitty as can be. But this is someone who, you know, could have made something of himself if he decided to go a completely different route, because he has the chops in his preferred medium. But, you know, he chose to do this instead.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Jones is like so important to the current moment. I don't think there's any person who has had a bigger influence on the exact two people we just talked about, like Jones on Anglin and on Fuentes. And going back to this Vax Watch thing, which I saw yesterday and other things like that, it is like quintessential Jones in the sense that, like, It's there's something about it is tethered to reality. We're a community. We're talking about stuff that's in the news. We have a place to, you know, launch our anger into the night. And there's also at the heart of it, and something so extremely dark and paranoid that is just kind of, that's the engine that's going to keep running whatever we do. And Jones was so good at that going back, you know, to his very early days. And Anglin similarly had a skill, I guess you would call it. I don't, what if skill, I mean, it's just an evil skill. It's like a, you know, like a cobra has a skill at, you know, just taking everything and making a narrative, this like paranoid, they're out to get you, conspiratorial narrative about every single thing in the news. And that's what, you know, that's what Vax Watch really is. And that's why it's such a great vehicle for people like Fuentes to do, you know, to build a fascist movement.
Right. Right.
The paranoia.
Right. Jared Holt is back in the YouTube live stream saying, all these guys feel like Walking Dead memes these days. Groypers, at least. Yeah, I mean, yeah. That's a great way to put it. So, yeah, Michael, thank you for joining me tonight. I want to ask you this, though, before I let you go. What do you think is next for, you know, the Groypers and, you know, these white supremacist movements as a whole? Do you think there'll be a lot more, especially as, you know, oddly enough, as more people get vaccinated and more things and opportunities open up, you know, more big events come together, more things for these guys to try to disrupt or sort of piggyback off of, you know, do you think they continue jumping on the anti-vaxxer movement as a sort of a way to try to, you know, spread their message without having to openly say the white supremacist shit up front?
Yes. How about that? Like, I do think that they're going to ride this as far as they're going to take it. I do think we are currently at a low point for the Democrats that I think it obscures some, you know, I have nothing positive to say about what's going on with that. But they're going to have some stuff passed, I'm sure, which is going to get people's feeling a little bit better. I don't know. They see people say inflation's going to get a little better. I don't know. But I think next year, one thing is going to definitely happen is things should be reopening a little bit more, right? I mean, COVID should be going away. And I think what we're going to transition to, and this may be, you know, master of the obvious here, sorry if it is, but you're going to see a very, very loud drumbeat for the midterms that is going to become a cacophonous roar towards the end, around this time next year, starting for, you know, Trump. Should Trump live? You know, there's no reason to believe he wouldn't live, but he's an old man, the desire for him to run is extremely palpable. I don't see anyone else who can really, you know, galvanize. He's a singular force in American politics, and the drumbeat to bring Trump back is going to be just cacophonous by this time next year. It's going to be out of control. If you recall, you know, the midterms of 2018, these guys were really pushing the caravan stuff. Do you remember that? I'm sure we talked about it at some point. And there was a lot of, like, you could just feel from behind the scenes, like Stephen Miller being like, hey, there's like eight guys out there with backpacks, like it's a caravan, right? It was like, it was really just like trying anything to get the caravan. And then Fox was running this stuff. It's like, what are we going to do about the caravan? And they would, like, you know, the picture of like whatever 50 people that were like crossing a bridge at that time.
And then they tried to like bring it back whenever there was like some sort of election they felt like it would be necessary. Like, we've. Interestingly, a couple of days before the most recent special election in Ohio, we've got word that there's a caravan headed towards. I mean,
right? Yes. This idea like MS-13 was just gonna just crash through your living room at some point. It was almost like the Antifa civil war that never came in that November. Just quickly on that point. I do think they're going to probably try to, you know, they got to see about immigration, how that's going to play. I don't think they were getting enough juice out of it, you know, before earlier in the year. I feel like people were not, you know, it's just not getting people going enough, partly because they need Trump out talking about it. He's the guy who talks about immigration, gets people scared about it because he does his carnival barker thing. But they're going to start, the drumbeat's going to get very, very loud for Trump by this time next year. And it's going to be a roar. And they are going to be, you know, depending on where Trump is, he may start doing rallies and things like that. I don't know if he's going to actually, there's also a chance he just takes the money and runs. You know, that's non-zero. Anything is possible, right? There's all kinds of deep state type conspiracies that I have in my head. Like, what if Trump is like behind the scenes, be like, all right, don't prosecute me. I'm just going to go through this thing. I'm going to take the energy out of this movement and not run. Don't you worry about it. Like, so maybe there's like, who knows, right? That's my tinfoil hat thing. I mean, who knows, right? But I do think that the desire for revenge by this time next year is, you know, for the 2020 election is going to be really palpable. And that's going to overshadow any kind of anti-vax type thing or anything like that. And we're going to see who is going to kind of emerge, you know, from, you know, the current crop of people out there. It's kind of a mess right now. And I would say that the biggest danger out there is actually the radical is this sort of Rittenhouse right, you know, that this radicalized normie thing that people are talking about, rather than these neo-Nazi white nationalist types. You know, Fuentes is still kind of he's straddling both right now, relatively effectively. But that's the thing that is a little bit more concerning. It's like, do you remember the like in Richmond, I think it was, they had a kind of a Second Amendment march where like all these people with guns and things like that.
Yes. And wasn't that the one where there were threats to like the one socialist state senator in Virginia and he had to go.
Yeah.
So
there was that. And then there were these, like, if you remember also, it's so much has happened in the last 4 years. It's like writing the history of this is like, I feel like I can retire after a certain point and just write history books, right? From like half the stuff I've lived through, like reporting this, but like, cause it's like, we forget, it's just too crazy. But like, if you remember, like also in the anti-lockdown stuff, this feels like a million years ago because it precedes the like, the George Floyd summer.
This was like the beginning of the right using the pandemic to its advantage. Yeah, for sure.
Yes, exactly. So like Gretchen Whitmer, you know, office, and she has this thing because she is, you know, I think an attractive woman who is a governor and a Democratic thing that, you know, that there's like this just like people with guns, like just going into, I mean, like that is, you know, that is my like, you know, framing of that memory is just like, we got to get Whitmer. And I think that that energy, that the gun rally, the Rittenhouse right is really going to be something that we're going to see a lot more of in the next few years. That is like the biggest threat to me on like the extremist tip. It's just this idea of vigilante thing, just take, you know, January 6th, like we're just going to come in and we're going to take it, and we don't like you and we're going to come and take it. And they don't, you know, to the disappointment of many of these ideological neo-Nazi types or whatever, they're not going to have their type of perfect politics. They're just going to be angry, you know, mostly white guys with guns.
Right. Michael Edison Hayden of the Southern Poverty Law Center, always a pleasure when you join this show. Thank you so much for taking the time tonight. Please feel free to take as much time as you'd like to plug any upcoming stories, any upcoming anything, you know, where people can find you online. The floor is yours, my friend.
Okay. So I have a story with Hannah and Megan coming out in a bit about, you know, this overlap, this accelerationist overlap between Epic and Nick Fuentes's group and InfoWars. And I have a really, like, the most amount of time I've spent this year on something, I have spent working on a long, long essay, 5,000 word essay. Megan Esquire and I have worked on for just draft after draft about the far right's usage and profit off of cryptocurrency, which is going to get me more trolls than I think.
When is this one coming out? Because you got to come back. If I don't know if you know this about me, but crypto and NFTs and the blockchain have quickly become my issue number one.
Well, this is, I mean, you're going to be, I think, quite staggered to Jaron Lanier talks about that, like, you know, that it's well known among tech people that you know, the first many of the first people to like hoard Bitcoin were not exactly savory people.
Right.
And we are going to show who some of them likely are. And they are very much Southern Poverty Law Center type people. And they have made millions of dollars in by hoarding Bitcoin. And some of them very smartly. Some of them are quite obvious. Some of them might be obvious to you, like Stefan Molyneux, and some of them are not. So that is coming. I don't know. We got, it's going to take, I think there's still working way its way through edits. I edited a story by Alex Koch that's coming that I'm really excited about. This is me stepping from behind the thing to do, you know, a different role. I like it going to behind instead of an actor. I'm a director on that one. And that is, I think, about, you know, some big bucks behind some anti-LGBTQ folks. And then the next one that I was going to mention is that I went to this Nick Fuentes rally because I am writing a very long essay about everything that has happened since January 6th. So that is part of that. And that's it. And my Twitter is Michael at Michael E. Hayden. That's it. I talk too much, but you invited me on here to do that.
No, I mean, I love it. I love it. That is one of the reasons I love having you on. But also, I want to make this clear, being that you just dropped a whole bunch of upcoming stuff, you have an open invite to this show.
That's right. We will talk crypto. We are going to talk crypto.
Sounds great. Looking,
you have to protect me from the trolls when it happens, because I can. All these guys with activated eyes are going to just like, I mean, be like, "Don't, bro, you mad? You mad? They're making money."
You're gonna get two things, and trust me, they're nothing compared to, I'm sure, what you've already been, you know, from other groups.
I'm more scared of the crypto people than I am.
Now you're gonna get the people saying, "You just don't understand it. Let me explain it to you." And who are then going to repeat exactly what you just said about crypto. And then two, you're going to get the people who will just outright throw you away by saying, have fun staying poor. Because they look.
Yes, have fun staying poor. But I have to disclose whether I own cryptocurrency in this or not. And I have to disclose that I do actually own some Ethereum, which I'm not like a crypto person. But I had to disclose it in this. And because, you know, whatever. So we will see if they spare me on that, or if they're just like, I told you that Ethereum was like a shit lib. Like,
I've had to do the same, and I have, I've a few, I've more than Ethereum, not a lot. I've scattered throughout different ones to try out different shit. I have a lot of. Like pennies in, literally pennies in like shit coins. When I was doing my my piece about all the influencers hawking all the pump and dump schemes.
Oh my God, yes.
So so I can tell you that doesn't matter. They're gonna pretend that you're just salty because you didn't get in when you should have, which completely is a great way for them to avoid the whole bulk of what you're arguing about it, which has nothing to do with the riches. Like I always say, like if you got rich off of crypto, that's nice. That's not my the reason why I criticize it. Would it have been nice if I got rich off of crypto? Sure. The same as the way it would have been nice if I won the lottery or hit the jackpot at the casino. Like it's nothing to do with. They never. Yeah, but we'll talk about that later.
We could talk about that in a whole different show. What I will say is I'm not saying anything here except for one, that some of the people who invested in it very early are white nationalists and neo-Nazis. That, you know, and they made a lot of money, and it's revolutionized the white supremacist movement, period. End of story.
Right.
These guys have a lot more money than they ever did before, and that's it. And they're also able to do things. Fuentes is deep in Litecoin, for instance. Whereas it's about a 20% adoption in the general public, I would say that it's almost 100% adoption in the extreme far right.
I think 20% for the general public is extremely generous as well.
Generous. Okay, yeah. So that's padded maybe. So like, okay.
What people forget is that, and you know, crypto people never say this because they love to tout all their numbers that this is going to be the next big thing. Anyone can have who knows how many wallets. So the idea that like you could count the wallets out there is how much people have, like how many people have, is bullshit. Like one person could have like 100 wallets, and there are people who have very many wallets. So
and also there are people like Anglin who has like hundreds of wallets, and it's largely because this stuff that he apparently does where it's like you know, just money laundering essentially.
Oh, right, because these guys have to exchange their money of the future for actual real money that they can use today. And right. I'm assuming they're not allowed to do that through the regular exchanges because of who they are. So they're definitely going through side channels to trade money, which is illegal.
Megan Squire is so good. She's just the best. Our team is getting so good. We just added Jason Wilson, who rocks. I'm so proud of the team we built. We unionized, and we after a lot of scandals that happened in SPLC, right when I joined or in 2019, I was like, what have I done? Right. But we've like really rebuilt, and it's like, it's just such a great team. It's like Megan, Hannah, Cassie, Rachel Carroll Rivas. We've got a really good team. We just added Jason. And I was going to say is we are going to, you know, Megan continues to provide stuff that you would not get anywhere else on the far right. And one of the things that's just so amazing in this essay that I got to tout real quick is that like she isolated payments that Anglin made to Weave every month as salary on the blockchain. Like pretty cool, actually. It's not like it's just like one detail, a small detail in a very long story, but we would never have that without her. She's just so good.
All right, I'm really looking forward to that piece, folks. You heard it here first. In the coming weeks, Michael Edison Hayden and the Southern Poverty Law Center finally unmask Satoshi.
He's Richard Spencer.
That would be, you know,
no, I'm just
kidding. Honestly, would not, you know, if you were to, it wouldn't surprise. I mean, if you read, I think
wishes right now, actually, that he, you know,
if you read the, you know, his white paper early, like that he put out there on Bitcoin, a lot of, you know, the same sort of, you know, gold bug type stuff that libertarians, you know, obviously, but it's not so far fetched is what I'm saying, if it was to be. Not Spencer, but you know, someone in that realm. It wouldn't surprise me. Have a great night, Mike.
All right, dude. Good talking to you.
Take care.
Bye, everybody.
All right, folks. Don't go anywhere. We have a lot more show for you. By the way, I think you could tell that I get extra giddy nowadays, and it's been like this for a few months now, when we get into the crypto, NFT, blockchain stuff. And I have been more seriously than ever trying to get the ball rolling on doing a show about all that stuff. Like, not an episode. A secondary show parallel to Doomed that would focus on all this. And I got to do it. It's just not, I don't think I could. And I'm seeing, I don't know if you've been following me. If you follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MattBinder, @MattBinder, you know, the way all these mainstream platforms like Discord and Reddit and Twitter are dabbling in those worlds, and you hear all these tech bros and VC types all pushing really hard for Web3. I think now is the time more than ever to start. I mean, you have to start. Like, you have to pay attention to this shit now. Like, think about anything and everything good about the internet. I know there's a lot of shitty stuff out there, but think about what the internet has done that is a net positive. Even these platforms that we mentioned that we always crap on, like the idea that, you know, Web 2.0, the social web, had all these problems, but in the big picture, it did connect people. It did help spread communications to the point where, you know, we can talk to anyone, anywhere, and knowledge can be shared. Again, it gets perverted and diverted, and all sorts of terrible things have happened too. But the basis of it is, you know, a pretty worthwhile thing to build out and create. Web3 seeks to take all of that and put a price tag on every single piece of it so that everyone who has the money can own whatever it is that you like. I mean, it's like, imagine, like I brought up on the last week's Twitch only show that I did last Tuesday, the Bloomberg piece where they imagined a world where, imagine Mario Kart comes out, the next installment of Mario Kart comes out, and you go to play online, but you can't be Mario because somebody's already bought the Mario NFT. So they have the exclusive rights to be Mario while playing Mario Kart. Want to be Luigi instead? No, can't. Someone already grabbed Luigi. You couldn't afford it. It cost $100,000 to be him. That's what this whole thing is headed towards, if we let it. If we let it. So I will be doing that for sure. But let's go to the second half of the show. But before we do that, patreon.com/mattbinder to support this show. If you can become a patron, I would greatly appreciate it. We really trying to build things out. This would help fund the time needed to do that secondary show that I think is super important, that I honestly, really should hold off for like, the next, like, milestone, like the next patron goal we hit, which I would like to be 500, but I can't. I think it's too important to hold on that. I think people need to be talking about this stuff ASAP. So if you can help get that going, patreon.com/mattbinder. I'm still demonetized on YouTube, but you can go to my Twitter profile on the app, and there's a tip jar option where you can click and see where you can send me one-off donations if you'd like. If you can't do a subscription, that's cool, but would like to give me money, you could do, you know, Cash App, Venmo. It's all on the Twitter tip jar. I'll find an easier way to get that to you guys too, but that's where you can do that for now. Follow me on Twitch, twitch.tv/mattbinder. I didn't do a Twitch only stream this week, but I will be doing one next week. I had some things come up, personal stuff with the, you know, family and home and things like that. I need to take care of that, so I didn't get a chance to do one this week. I'll make it up to you guys. I always do. So twitch.tv/mattbinder, doomedcast.com for the podcast version of this show. What else? ratethispodcast.com/doomed for all the links where you could leave podcast reviews. I think that's all I'm going to drop for now. So I got the Patreon. Oh, youtube.com/mattbinder. Subscribe there if you're not already. Oh, let me thank people who became patrons over the past week. When was the last show? The 4th? All right, let's... So these are the people who just recently joined the Patreon. Will L., Evan B., Jesus, Rocky R, Jack G, Jason L, and just now the most recent patron, John P. Thank you all so much for supporting the show and becoming patrons. Again, patreon.com/mattbinder. Oh, and I am a Twitch affiliate now. And these people became subscribers on Twitch. Again, if you have an Amazon Prime subscription, if you pay for Amazon Prime already, you have a free membership each month where you can give basically free money that Amazon gifts you to your favorite Twitch streamer. And these people, some people did that with their Amazon Prime subscription to me. Some people even just paid to become Twitch subscribers to my channel. Again, twitch.tv/mattbinder. And the people who became subscribers there, Fake Manrique, Slake Hatch, Rach B1, Rebel Without a Cause, Wolf Cat with a Gun, Hey, It's Vina, and I think, oh, we got Dr. Gus, I think I'm getting in the spinach monster. I think I'm getting in the territory of who I name dropped the last time. So there we go. Thank you all so much for the support, wherever you can support this show. So now let's go to the second half of the show. If you are a freebie listener to the podcast, this is where I say goodbye to you. For live stream viewers, that's all of you watching live right now. And of course, for patrons, you can stick around. Just give me a second to get a drink, refill, cue up all the clips I'd like to show you guys for the next segment. And let's do this. See you all next time, everybody who isn't sticking around, on Doomed.